And if we could shut... someone else standing over there by the lights, if maybe we could shut... no, that's the screen. That's probably... No, that's power off. No, don't do that. That'll turn the screen power off. Thank you. But you just turned the light... Oh, man. You gotta turn that back on again or no one's gonna be able to see the presentation. Goodness gracious. Did you power it back on? Interesting. Okay, well, while we're waiting for the projector to warm back up...
Is it on?
The projector? No. It'll wait a second. It's gotta cool down and then cool back. I am wearing a microphone because I'm going to podcast this. This is all going to show up on my website later, so if anybody wants to go and sort of download it. And for anybody who's listening just to the podcast and doesn't know what's going on, the projector has been shut off, so we're waiting for the projector to warm back up. This is the point in the act where we're supposed to all do impromptu jokes and sort of keep everybody entertained. My name is Patrick Jackson. I am the director of the General Education Program. I'm also an associate professor in the School of International Service. Joining me up here today are Jamie Wyatt, who is the assistant to the director, which is me, and Tiffany Sanchez, who is the director of first-year experiences in the Office of Campus Life?
New student programs
in the Office of Campus Life. And I'm totally blanking on your first name.
Jeffrey Beers.
And Jeffrey Beers, who is...
I'm the PA for visual literacy.
That's right. I couldn't remember exactly which course you were a PA for. So, excellent. Okay. Now, can we see if that thing is working again? Hit the power button? Yeah. Okay. All right, it's whirring now. And maybe we're going to get a presentation. After it does its countdown. Okay, good. All right. Now, again, since we're not giving out free cookies, you're obviously not here today for food. You're obviously here to hear a little bit about the General Education Program and the University College Program. So I'm going to say a few things about both of those programs, which I oversee with a lot of very capable assistants. And then we are going to sort of open it up for a few questions. There will be another one of these sessions. This is the early show. There's a late show this afternoon at 1:15. We will also be hanging around between time and at lunch to answer other sorts of questions. But let me start off here. Oh, look. Now you can actually see the presentation. Isn't that nice? All right. So let me start off with a rhetorical question. By which I mean not a question I want you to answer, but a question I'm going to simply pose to you to think about, which is, why are you going to college? This does not mean those of you, this is obviously directed at those of you in the audience who are going to college. There are bad reasons to go to college, right? Because I'm supposed to, bad reason. Because I'd like to get a job, bad reason. Lots of people didn't go to college and got jobs, so clearly there's a difficulty here. I don't think one goes to college for these sorts of things. Because my parents want me to. Okay, that's a sort of good reason, but it's not really a good reason as to why you should go to college. And for parents, you change the question just slightly. Why are you sending your kids to college? What are you hoping that they're going to get out of going to college? Well, hopefully, in the first instance, we hope that they're going to get something that is not simply a continuation of high school. Lord knows we all had enough high school. So we don't want more of that. We want something different. We want something that's kind of qualitatively different than the sort of experience, the sort of educational experience that one had in high school. This is often referred to as higher education, thus the title of the slide. Something different about the university environment. It is, if I can steal a quotation from one of my favorite philosophers, a gentleman named Friedrich Nietzsche, college, undergrad especially, is a chance to become who you are, to figure out what kind of person you are, to figure out where your commitments are, to figure out basically what your identity is and what then follows from that kind of person that you've been given the opportunity to become. That, in many ways, I think, is the purpose of going to college. That's the point of undergraduate education. Yes, you will be learning more. There are more things, more subjects. People who are more renowned specialists within their fields will be teaching you when you are at college, right? Because you've got people who are publishing and doing a little more active research than you often get on the high school level. But it's not just that. To steal a line from Apple Computer, it's also a little bit about learning different. Not the same style of learning, not the same style of encountering material and encountering your instructors as you would be used to in a high school setting. So there is a qualitative break. And one of the ways that we like to talk about this qualitative break is with this concept of general education, which I think is one of the more important demarcations between being a high school student and being a college student. Right, the idea that you will be not just knowing certain things about particular subject, but that you will become, in some sense, a generally educated human being. That is ultimately the goal. Now, when we talk about general education, I don't mean the sort of things that you would be learning in your particular major or field of specialization. I mean the sorts of things that you would be learning that are a bit more broad than that, a little more multidisciplinary. The kinds of things, when we use phrases like educated people should know these sorts of things, that's kind of what we're getting at when we talk about general education. The sorts of things that allow you to then, you know, read newspaper articles on contemporary world events and have some sort of sense of what's going on, to be able to pick up a, not necessarily a technical physics journal, but certainly a lay physics journal, and figure out what's going on and what the significance of that is, to engage in sort of broader intellectual discussions about a whole variety of topics. That's the goal of general education. At other programs, you will sometimes hear this referred to as the core of the undergraduate experience. It is in many ways the center point of what you will do as an undergrad. And in many ways, this is also reflected in the fact that you'll spend one quarter of your class time in undergraduate doing general education courses or courses for general education credit, 31 credits in the general education program here. And, you know, 120 credits to graduate, so a little bit of simple math, one quarter of your time will be spent doing these kinds of things. Now, if you look across the broad spectrum of universities in the United States, there are two models for how people ordinarily do this general education. One of the models is the everyone takes the same thing model. This is probably most clearly exemplified by the kind of schools in which everyone is literally reading exactly the same thing at the same time. Right? It's a very set curriculum, and no one has really any kind of elective options. You find that in some schools. There's another kind of option for doing this general education, which is what are sometimes called distribution requirements. And that is simply, you got to take two math classes, you got to take two sociology classes, you know, take two theater classes, whatever, and then you do that and you've somehow fulfilled the requirement of being generally educated. At AU, we actually don't do either of those two things in the general education program. Instead, we do this interesting kind of blend of the two of them. We actually come up with an alloy, and the reason I show a little picture of a white gold ring up here is because white gold is an alloy. It's not naturally found in the world. It has to actually be produced. It has to be forged. And in fact, at high enough temperatures, white gold will separate back out into its component metals, which is kind of interesting. But the point is that it's an alloy, and for anybody who really knows their periodic table of the elements, there's an elaborate visual pun here. Some of you caught it. For those of you that didn't, AU is the atomic symbol for gold. Anyway, when I talk about this as an alloy, I struggle with the metaphor to try to think this through. The reason I think of our gen ed program as an alloy is because it's not a synthesis. We've not taken a bunch of opposed things and tried to put them together into like one overarching unity. Instead, we've got a blend. We've got a blend of a variety of different principles. We've got a blend of a variety of different curricular offerings. And they're all kind of held together in this thing called the general education program, forged into something that constitutes a unified experience. And that's basically what you will go through as an undergraduate here. Basically, what we give you is a set of choices, a lot of choices, but within limits. Right? What we do in the general education program is we've divided things up into five different curricular areas representing what we modestly like to call the sum total of human knowledge, and you have to take courses across these five curricular areas in order to fulfill your general education requirements. You can't just take any course. They have to be courses that fit within these areas and that have been, they go through a sort of approval process so that we can make sure that they're all sort of going in approximately the same direction. Within these five curricular areas, there is a very diverse set of course offerings. We have 150 different courses at the university which can be taken for general education credit. So this is not the lockstep form where you have to take exactly the same thing as everybody else. You get quite a bit of choice across these different areas. So you, the individual student, can chart what it is that you want to focus on as you go through these things. On the other hand, these five areas do also have a single set of program-wide values that they are all, and all the courses within them, are trying to fulfill. Right? So sort of unity, diversity, balance in a lot of ways. A lot more choice than you find at other places, and a lot more sort of guidance than you would find at places that are just really dispersed. So that's the interesting alloy, the distinctive alloy that you get here at American. And apparently we're pretty good at what we do because we've been a paradigmatic school for general education programs for a number of years. Regularly people are coming out and studying what it is that we do to try to bring our experience of running these sorts of things onto other campuses. So they look to us to try to figure out what these sorts of things would be like. So I think that's a pretty good thing. Now, what are those common program values that we have? I'll start with those, and I want to talk a little bit about the different curricular areas. In terms of the values of the program as a whole, there are basically six things that we try to stress throughout all of your general education courses. And the first thing is communication, both written and oral. So these general education courses are ordinarily very writing-intensive classes. You do a lot of essays, a lot of reflection. Some of us like to use blogs as ways of encouraging reflection. We'll have students blog pre and post class to be able to start thinking through sets of material. Engaging in various kinds of face-to-face conversations and then virtual conversations. And then there's, of course, you know, this sort of naturally fades off from the written into the oral. Lots of presentations, lots of ability to communicate in words. That's one of the things we try to stress. Another value that we try to stress throughout is critical thinking, being somewhat, shall we say, healthily skeptical. That was really awkwardly phrased. To have a healthy skepticism about information that is presented to you. Because, right, we all know what wikiality is, don't we? Right? We're all familiar with the Colbert Report. We're all familiar with the idea that knowledge on the internet can be constructed basically by majority click. And so you read something in Wikipedia, and you know, it might not necessarily be correct. And you read something on a strange website, and it might not necessarily be correct. So how do you evaluate that? How do you figure out what's actually a valid set of claims? That's critical thinking. And shades off into this thing called information literacy, particularly important in the age of the internet, something we try to stress across all the general education courses. Ethics. Every area of human knowledge has its own particular set of ethical considerations, even the natural sciences, which sometimes like to, people will narrate the natural sciences as though they were ethically neutral. Well, I can just mention two examples. Nuclear weapons and genetic engineering. These obviously raise sets of moral and ethical questions which we need to wrestle with. And by we, I mean not just students and not just scientists. I mean educated people generally. Again, that's the sort of thing that we in the program would like to emphasize. Aesthetics. Every domain of human knowledge has its particular kind of contribution to aesthetics. And you might not think that math or physics has aesthetic qualities, but in many ways this is simply because you haven't been taught to appreciate them yet. There is a particular kind of beauty in certain equations. Right? Even art, we like to think about art and fine arts as being the domain of aesthetics. Still, one has to be trained to appreciate these things. You know, it's one thing to look at the Monet picture that everybody has on their wall, as they did when I was a freshman, right? Everybody had like the same Monet print on their wall. That was like the big thing that year. So everybody had this picture, and it was just, okay, that's kind of pretty. But if you start delving into it, there are reasons why these pictures are aesthetically pleasing. There's a substructure to how these things are arranged. Same with a play, same with a political speech. There's an aesthetic quality to all of these things, and we try to stress that across all the different courses. We try to stress a multi-perspectival way of encountering material, particularly interested for our program in some of the diverse information and perspectives that has come out of recent scholarship on race, class, gender, and culture. Different ways in which people make meaning and make sense out of things. And we try to make sure that all of our classes are stressing and emphasizing that kind of multi-perspectival aspect of things. And particularly, this goes to our sixth value, which is the global point of view. One of the standard things that you will find, one of the major emphases of the university as a whole, is its global character. And since we're located here in the capital of the world empire, it's a good place to be global, because everything comes through Washington, D.C. Right? Everything comes through D.C. If you weren't careful, if you were walking on the sidewalk between here and Tenleytown, you passed through two countries, right? Without even knowing. If you step too close to the Swedish embassy or the Japanese embassy, you're actually in another country. So, yes, it's global. Right? And there's a variety of things all around this city, and we try to incorporate that into what we do in the general education program, remembering that we're not simply, you know, sitting out on some island someplace. There is a world out there, and we are all connected to it, and that is one of the things we try to stress throughout our gen ed courses. So, if that's the unity, where's the diversity? Well, some of the diversity is in different curricular areas that we have. We have five of them. We divide the sum total of human knowledge, and we divided it this way back when we set the program up in 1989, and we decided that was a good division when we comprehensively reviewed the program a few years ago, so apparently human knowledge hasn't changed all that much. We have five things that we still think are the major subdivisions. We have the creative arts, right? Music, poetry, painting, etc. We have traditions that shape the Western world, a lot of classical sort of philosophy and literature, things that are still very important with setting the terms of the debates that we're continually having. We have global and multicultural perspectives, studying the politics of the rest of the world and how it is put together. We have social institutions and behavior, right? There are clearly those floating around. Economics, psychology, anthropology, various other sorts of contributions to knowing things about human society. And finally, we have the natural sciences. Right, so we think those are pretty much the five major areas of human knowledge, and as a result of the way we've designed our program, you have to take courses within each of these areas, which will again try to both talk about their specific area, but also to fulfill those large program goals that I laid out a second ago. Now, I don't want to get too technical here, but there are three rules that you probably need to know if you start thinking through the general education program. Rule number one is the distribution rule, which is you need two courses in each of those five curricular areas, which means 10 courses total over the course of your general education experience at American. You must take two courses within each. Now, there's a further level of complexity in that within each of the curricular areas, we divide it up into clusters and sequences, and you have to take things in the right cluster, but then we're not going to go into that right now. If you would like to, there is a copy of the pamphlet, Informed Effective Minds, up here, which is a pamphlet that we have sort of explaining the overview of the whole general education program. You're welcome to take a look at that if you would like, or you can go to our website, and we also have that information up there. The second rule is a sequence rule. General education courses are divided up into two kinds of courses. There's a foundation course and a second level course. Which one do you think you have to take first? Yes, that's right. The foundation course. So you take the foundation course first, understanding music, and then you take a second level course on what would be a good music second level course that would follow on from that class. Masterpieces of music. There you go. Obviously, you could sort of understand masterpieces of music a little bit better after you've had foundations of understanding music. So that's the basic idea of the sequence rule. And then there's the third rule, which is the multidisciplinary rule, which means you cannot take all of your general education classes in the same department. So yes, you might happen to be an economics major. This does not, however, mean you get to take 7 economics classes and call it general education. Because where I come from, 7 economics classes isn't general, it's specialized. And really, the idea of the general education program is to get you out of various things. What does this mean? What it will mean, I'll be quite honest with you, it will mean that probably at one point in your career as a student, you will say, I'm being forced to take something I have no interest in. Yes, you will in fact say that. And you know what? That's a good thing. And you know why that's a good thing? Because it might be the most important course you take in your entire undergraduate program. All right? When I was an undergrad, not here, another institution, I was forced to take an art history class. I said, what in God's name do I want an art history class for? Who cares? Right? I know what I'm doing. This is irrelevant to me. It was the most marvelous, marvelous course. It allowed me to actually understand why I liked French post-impressionism so much. And it was great. It's a great sort of mind-broadening experience. So we have that kind of element to the program. We will, in fact, push you to do things that you might not do otherwise. This is, of course, part of education, which is our mission here. Things you are probably wondering, I will just mention very briefly. Can you AP out of any of these? Yes, you can. We will give you AP credit, according to a table on our website, for up to 4 of the courses in the general education program, which means you will still need to take 6 of them, even if you have as many of the AP credits as you've been able to amass. Why do we do this? Because there is a difference between examining out of a course and having the experience of actually sitting in the course. And we think it's very important that people actually have that experience to a very large extent. So we do give you AP credit. There's a table up on the website of exactly what will count. Transfer credit. If you are a transfer student, if you're coming in with credits from some other educational institution, then we will, in fact, give you credits according to a formula for some of those. But once you are enrolled at AU, we insist that you take all of your courses for general education credit at AU. Why do we insist this? Because that way, it allows us, and by us I mean me, some ability to monitor what's going on in these courses and make sure that they are, in fact, fulfilling the program goals that we have in mind. Right, allows us a little bit of oversight to make sure, because remember, this is not a natural combination. This is a blend. It is forged, and it has to be continually reforged. It's a good metaphor. I should get a hammer, put it in my office, you know. I'm forging thing. So this is the idea here is that we want to make sure that you're actually getting that experience. So you have to take all your gen ed courses actually here on campus. Can you take gen ed courses pass fail? Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And can you take other courses that we offer in the general education program, or say you can take for gen ed credit, but not take them for gen ed credit? Suppose you really got the bug for understanding music after you took your required classes within the gen ed program. By all means, anything we offer is also available for elective credit. So you can always take things just for the purpose of enriching your experience and broadening your horizons even further. So 10 is a minimum number of courses. It's not a maximum. You can keep going and be even more generally educated, and we'll be happy. All right, now, this is a double-part session. Think of this as a sort of medley. Right? We finished the first part, now we're going to do a little transition over to the second part, which is University College, and it's actually not that hard a transition because University College, academically, is a subset of the general education program. Right? And what I mean by that is that all of the classes that one takes within the University College program are, in fact, general education courses. And to be even more specific, they're foundation general education courses within the particular curricular areas. So you would take those if you were in the University College in the fall of your freshman year, and it would allow you to start getting a leg up on some of your general education requirements. So academically, it's a subset, but it's more than just a subset. University College is not just a set of courses. University College has three other components that differentiate it from the rest of the program and also from the rest of the university, sort of things that are added onto this particular alloy that we continue to forge. One is the residential aspect of University College. I'll elaborate on this in just a second. This is different than some of our other classes. There's an experiential aspect to participating in University College. And finally, there is a peer mentoring aspect of participating in University College, which are, again, a little different than what you would find in other parts of the university's course offerings. So, the residential aspect. What do I mean by this? Well, if you're in the University College, you live on a floor in the residence hall with the other students in your University College class. So this last fall, I taught world politics. I had 22 students, I think, in my class. They all lived together. They all lived together up on the sixth floor of Leonard Hall, which meant they saw a lot of each other. Right? They're all rooming together. They run into each other in the bathroom and so on and so forth. So you're living with your classmates. The classes, in fact, are often taught in the residence halls, as much as we are able to do that. So the course I was teaching, where the students were living in Leonard, was also taught in Leonard. So there was a sort of integration with the residential aspect of things. Why do we do this? Well, we do this because living together with a group of people who are engaged in some kind of common intellectual endeavor helps to produce a learning community, which is to say, you all get to know each other really well. What does this do? It makes for much better class experiences. If people already have a good sense of each other and they're kind of comfortable with each other, I've found, then when we get into a really controversial topic, let's pick a random example. War in Iraq, which in world politics we talk about a lot. It's easier to have that discussion or argument. It's easier to do that when you know the people who are involved. You're not talking to strangers. You're talking to people you know fairly well. So you're able to disagree and disagree vociferously, but still remain on good terms. You can have a civil disagreement. And civil disagreements is such a fascinating thing to actually try to engineer. And that's one of the things that happens with this sort of living arrangement. Plus, as a freshman, it also means that you are coming into a situation where you're going to immediately get to know like 20 other people. And you're going to get to know them fairly well because you're going to be seeing them a lot. Not just living with them, but also being in classes with them, which gives you lots more material to talk about with them. It facilitates out-of-class learning. And by out-of-class learning, I mean the situation where, and this is not an atypical story, where somebody's in the bathroom brushing their teeth and somebody else comes in and brushes their teeth next to them, and in the course of brushing their teeth, somebody says, so what do you think about that Machiavelli thing? And then people start talking about, you know, politics and morality. And okay, right, it's, you know, okay, so the students, so it's 11 o'clock in the morning when they're waking up. But people are talking about these things outside. Right? Or, look, the professor's assigned an exam for the econ class. What happens? Instant study group. Instant study group takes over the whole parts of the hall. That's great. You're able to really start collaborating with people in that very kind of intense residential living learning situation. So that's part of the reason we do that. I said also there was an experiential component to University College. When you are in the university college program, you start off with either the freshman service experience or the Discover DC experience. Freshman service experience, you would come on campus and then we place you in a service environment for a few days, doing some sort of volunteer work, structured someplace in the city. Discover DC, we take you to various sites within the city, sort of explore the history of the city, the sociology of the city, the politics of the city, and really just sort of let people experience this marvelous town that we're now all living in here together. And it is a town. If you're familiar with cities, D.C. is not really a city like in the way New York is a city. D.C. is a town. It's a big town. And you'll see what I mean when you're here, right? It doesn't have that kind of city feel to it. All right, so you start off with these kinds of things. But your experiential stuff doesn't just end there. There is then a weekly co-curricular lab time that everybody in UC has in common, and professors are encouraged to use this for off-campus site visits, service learning experiences, things along these lines, ways of getting you out of the classroom, but continuing to explore the themes of the course and taking advantage of Washington, D.C. in order to do so. There is a common event for everybody in the university college. We try as hard as we can to make this what we call transdisciplinary, which means not something that is just sort of appropriate for one class, but something that a number of different sort of educated traditions can feed into. Last year, for instance, we had a public viewing of Al Gore's film on global climate change, and then a broad-ranging set of discussions about this. And it was very interesting to see sort of what the people in the biology class had to say about this issue, and then what people in the economics class, and then what people in the world politics class, or the politics in the U.S. class had to say about these things. So we try to integrate that and get that much broader set of responses. And, you know, these are the sorts of things that we try to do here. Every class in the university college, if you're taking a UC class, you carry one additional credit, which means if it's a three-credit class, you have one additional credit, so you basically take it for 4 credits. If you are taking a lab science, which is already 4 credits, you basically take it for 5 credits. That one extra credit covers these extra out-of-class experiences, which people engage in. And just because, you know, we know that professors are doing their thing, and professors are very involved in doing this, but we know sometimes that they need a little assistance. And also we know that sometimes students may be a little uncomfortable going straight to the professor for various things, which is why we have the third component of the program, which is peer mentoring. Every UC class has a program associate. Stand up and turn around. This is a program associate, a real live one. And what program associates are is they are upper class persons, upper class people. They're not first year students. And what a program associate does is they live on the floor in the residence hall with the class. So they are a sort of not quite an RA. They're not really a resident assistant, but they are living with. They are a source of support and mentoring and guidance that's actually living up there on the floor. But they also work very closely with the professor for the individual class. So they help to mentor students outside of class, perhaps going over material, perhaps facilitating students being able to sort of accomplish assignments in different ways. If I say to my class, all right, so you're going to go out and you're going to make some videos now, and you're going to go make some short videos about these issues, and that's what you're going to do, and there's a new media center, and have fun. And I'll say that and then walk out of the room, and students will go, how the heck do we, I've never made a movie before. Well, the first person they talk to is the program associate, and of course this is a setup. The program associate's been briefed as exactly what it is that she can tell them to do, and then they can go and start sort of exploring things in this way. The program associates are also, unlike the professors, available when students actually want to talk about things. And of course, all you students know when students actually want to talk about things, right? 2 a.m. Those of us who are professors who have small kids, even if we are awake, we're not talking to you at 2 o'clock in the morning. We're dealing with our screaming child. And the program associates are able to be there during those other kinds of times. There is also throughout the university college program an emphasis on collaborative learning strategies. You will not find, this is incredibly atypical for AU, right? This large lecture kind of experience, you will not find this. We do not do this in general at American. You don't have big lecture classes like this, and especially not in the university college where everything is small. Even the biggest class, which is our economics class, which actually has 60 people in it, is broken down into 3 smaller residential units, each with its own program associate. So you're dealing with groups of approximately 20 people. And you're dealing with groups that are really focusing on collaborative interchange of information. There was a comment that came out of one of the focus groups about University College a couple of years ago, which I think perfectly exemplifies this. One of the students said during the focus group, it was like there were 19 of us teaching 19 of us. Think about that for a second. Right? Because proven fact that you learn more from your colleagues than you learn directly from your professors in some cases. Professors' jobs are to set up learning environments and facilitate discussions and facilitate encounters. Where you're going to really get stuff is at that long discussion that you had at 2:30 in the morning about justice. And then you're going to go, oh, wow, yeah. And then that's going to show up in class once you've slept that off 2 days later. You'll come into class and actually still be able to talk about these things. That's the real learning. And believe me, that's the stuff that 10, 15, 20 years after you graduate, that's what you're going to remember. You are not going to remember what the capital of Ghana is. Right? You're not even going to remember where Ghana is on a map. And you might not have to, because Ghana might not be there 10, 15, 20 years after you graduate from college. And if you don't believe me, see Soviet Union, the, which is now an element of the history books. Right? Things change. Facts change. Experiences stay with you. And that is what we attempt to do within University College. Okay, so how do you get into University College? Well, there are three things you have to do. Number one, you have to pay your enrollment deposit. You've got to actually be saying you're going to come to AU. That's important. Then we'll take your application. Then there's an application. You can go to our website, and you can find the application. We are not looking for a minimum grade point average. You have to understand, the University College is not the honors program. University College is not reserved for people with a certain kind of academic acumen that they've been able to demonstrate in high school. University College is for people who are committed to this kind of residential living learning situation. That's what we're looking for. So the most important part of the application is actually the short 500-word essay we ask students to write, explaining why they think they would be good for the program and why they think the program would be good for them. And then we, by which I mean me, sit down and look at all of these applications. And, well, what do I do then? I throw dice, so you should cross your fingers. No. Really, what happens is, we take everybody's choices for seminars, because you tell us on the application what your first, second, and third choices are for University College seminars. And we try as hard as we can to fit people's interests to the seminar spaces we have available. Obviously, there's a limited number of slots. We're targeting about 300 people this year. Last year, we did have to turn some people away. We had more applications than we had slots to put people in. Applying early is also a good thing, so that we actually have you in the system. But we try as hard as we can to match people up. The whole idea here, because this is a specific kind of living learning experience that we're attempting to produce, the idea here, what we are trying to do, is we are trying to accomplish that sort of diverse environment. We're trying to put people together, match them up with their interests, and create interesting places for students to be, for professors to be. So that's basically our goal when we're dealing with the University College. So if you're interested, then that's what you should do. You should apply. If you want more information, if I haven't thrown enough at you, or if, as usual, when information is thrown at you, it goes in and then it goes out, particularly since it's not the first of those sessions that you've been to today, there are a number of different places you can go. You can go up on the web. We have our general education website with our phone number. We have our University College website with its phone number. They do actually ring to the same phone, but they ring different lines. I'm Patrick Jackson. As I said, I'm the director. Jamie is the assistant to the director. If you call either of those numbers, you're probably going to find one of us there, because that's where we kind of hang out. And as I said, I'm going to podcast this, and that will actually be podcast to my own individual website, which is called kittenboo.com, for reasons that if you go to the site, you will be able to find out why it's actually called that. So, with that, I'm going to stop, and I will open it up for a few questions.